We're on Chaf Amud Aleph. We're going to start by the middle of the Amud, by the two dots. Yes, a few weeks ago is the last time we learned, because we had a couple of breaks. So we saw this very quickly, and we'll see it again, and there's a couple of kashas about this Gemara, some obvious ones. Rav Gidl Havi Uragel Dahavi Kozel V'yosev Ashar Detfils. Rav Gidl was a person that was accustomed
to
continuously be sitting by the gates of the tefillah, where women would...
Can I tell you a funny story?
Mikvah.
This is really, it's Lamasa anyhow.
Sure.
We were in Israel, this was about 6 years ago, and I stepped in a bit, but she didn't. My wife would get lost coming out of my house.
Yeah.
Because you got to walk with me. So what am I going to do? She said, you'll stay down.
Right.
So I was stayed across the street down the thing.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there, and some woman says, there's a man lurking in front of the mirror. I'm like, wait, you don't know, but this gets better. I recognize the voice. This was a girl I went to elementary school with, and I said, my whole life, she grew up in Muncie with me, okay? This is funny. So I don't say anything. I move further down the block. I figured I'll keep working. She comes out there, because, okay, goes back 3-4 years ago, working in a hotel. Her brother-in-law makes a bar mitzvah in the hotel, so she walks into the hotel. So I said, I have to walk over to this. I already mentioned it, because I mean, it's a shame. Yeah. But, you know, it's a funny story.
Hit him on the you're on tape.
I said, do you remember? I said, fine. I said, do you remember? A couple of years ago, you went to the mikveh, you were screaming about a man lurking in front of the mikveh. She looks at me. She says, it was you? I said, yes. She says, how did you know? How did you know it was me? I said, I remember your annoying voice. I said, it was embarrassing to me. It's bad enough I had to go there. She was like, and her husband was there. I went to school with him. We know each other all since we're kids. It was just a very, very funny story that I remembered.
So your response should have been, I am Reb Gidl. Because that's what he did.
The funny thing, Nebuch, her husband's a doctor. You know what he does? He does handles all the people that come from the bombings, and that's what he does. He's a trauma doctor. And he got his training in Bed-Stuy. He says, you know, we went to high school, college, camp, everything together. He says, I got to train my training in Bed-Stuy. He says, but that's one thing. He says, them I don't care about. He says, but having to put together, he says, you can't even imagine. Mm. It is very difficult to do. I said, you're doing the biggest mitzvah that you can do. But that's,
All right, so that's
the story.
So now this brings this Gemara a little bit more to life.
Exactly.
So Rav Gidl, he was sitting a Shardit Tefillah. Amrohu, this is what he would say. He deliberately was there. He wasn't waiting for anyone. Right. He was there to give instructions. Hachit Tefillah, the Hachit Tefillah. So he taught all the women all the proper halachos. You shouldn't have a chatzitza. You make sure you... We tell you, well, this way,
that's
not that way.
That's what the mikvah lady is supposed to do. What do you need him for?
Well, apparently the mikvah lady there wasn't so good. So Rav Gidl wanted to be extra cautious. So Rabbanan turns to Rav Gidl and asks the obvious question. Aloka, the Satik Mar, mi Yetzirah, aren't you concerned of the Yetzirah that you're there in such an environment? So maybe you're Yetzirah. So we have this little aleph in parentheses, which we're going to get to in the Bach, which we usually don't see the Bach. Bach usually has a letter here or word there. A lengthy Bach, which is going to ask a question, but we'll see that in a moment. Omlahu, so he said, that the way that I look at these women, they're considered like
white geese.
That's how Rashi translates it. Just like white geese. And what exactly? Yeah, well, the question is exactly, what does that mean? Well, white, you know, he's very innocent, naive.
Pure, right?
Pure. And so he had absolutely no Yetzirah whatsoever, but that was a legitimate question, and that was his response. And the reason why it's kind of difficult, why did he pick up on white geese? So the Sefer Beis Yossi brings down a possible approach that there's a Gemara, and later on, the last parak in Brachos, that says, "Har avos b'chalom." If a person sees a goose in their dream, yitzak lo chachma. You can anticipate that you're going to acquire knowledge. The Gemara in the ninth parak gives every possible scenario of anything that you dream about, what almost some minimal, small type of a nevuah that is. So, what is this symbolism? So he explains like this. The Pasuk says, when it comes to a person who, by the Sota, Ish Ish Kisista Ishto, and the Chazal tells us, Ein Adam Chayta Beznos, El im kein nichnas bo ruach shtus. So only when a person acts without any seichel, without any thought, any thinking, that's the person that will gravitate toward towards nus. So therefore, when he says the symbolism of a goose is someone who has chokhmah, which he's constantly thinking. He's not someone who would ever bring himself to ruach shtus. That's the how they explain why he focused on that. Okay, that's story number one. So in the story number one, the question was about the Yetzer Hara. Rav Yochanan also used to frequent mikvaot, but he would go for a different reason. He wouldn't go to give them guidance and instructions how to be tayyibel. Rather, Rav Yochanan habirakul dahavi ka'ozol v'yosav v'shar depischa. So he would sit also by the gateway of the place where they would be tayyibel. Omar, he said, he salkon benos Yisrael when they would leave from the mikvah, but asin mitzvah, they would ascend and come up from being toivel, mistaklin b, they will gaze upon my beauty, benavuhu zara the shviri kavasi, and that they should be zayche to be able to have children who are as beautiful as
like
me.
Like Gaifa, though?
That's what it would sound like, right?
Yeah. That doesn't make sense.
What Rashi says, Rabbi Yochanan was an Adam Yafet Tohar Hoya.
Okay.
He was a very
good-looking man.
Very good-looking man.
All right, so, but still that he should take on the thing, oh, because I'm good-looking and you look at me, you'll have good-looking children. Still like a Gaiva type.
Well, that also doesn't make a lot of sense either, because if I look at someone beautiful, does that make me, I'm going to start looking beautiful?
But if you remember in the Torah, it was the thing with Yaakov, with the
with
the sheep and the thing that give them spots and everything. He did certain things in front of them and they were pregnant.
Right. True.
They gave birth to a certain thing.
Okay. Okay. Okay, you can say it that way. I mean, the basic shot that people say about this is Rabbi Yochanan, it wasn't necessarily physical beauty that he was found in the front cover of a GQ magazine. It means that he had a tremendous shine, a ruchnius that emanated forth from him. And therefore, when they would look upon them, upon Rabbi Yochanan, they would connect to ruchnius. That's what it means. And therefore, that doesn't mean that their children would be beautiful. Rabbi Yochanan cares about how good-looking you are, but it means that they're going to be similar in
appearance, in machshava, and actually, how to be a good Jew. Maybe he was, like
right.
I say, he's beautiful in his
nation.
Right.
So that's the reason why Rabbi Yochanan was there. So he didn't actually, it sounds like, according to what Rabbi Gidl does, he was mamish there. He saw the women, or he was very close to the women at the time that they actually were titled, because he would give them instructions, do it this way. It sounds like he was there. When it came to Rabbi Yochanan, he didn't actually see them being titled. But rather, afterwards, he saw them after they left, and they were going to their cars or whatever, that's when they gazed upon him sitting outside. So, on this, the Rabbanan asked a different question. Amar Rabbanan, lo kamistakli mar ma'ayin bisha. Aren't you afraid that they're going to give you an ayin bisha, an ayin hara? Right? People are going to look at how beautiful you are, and they're going to say, wow, you're so beautiful, you're so beautiful. And we don't want someone to focus so much attention on ourselves, on our positive qualities, because a person can receive the ayin hara. So why would you put yourself in such a situation in the limelight as such? So you're gonna get an ayin hara. So Amar Lo, Rabbi Yochanan said, good question, but it's not something which applies to me. Ana mizara di Yosef Kasim. Rabbi Yochanan said that I'm a direct descendant of Yosef Atzadeh. That when it came to Yosef, the Ayin Hara had absolutely no control, no power over him. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, Ben Paras Yosef, that Yosef was the son of a fruitful vine, Ben Paras Ali Ayin, that he was a person with a fruitful vine that was upon the eye.
Also, Yosef was the Yafei Tohar also.
He was also beautiful, right?
Right.
Exactly. But it didn't,
she wanted him.
But that didn't. But that didn't affect him either. V'yamri Rab Ahavo al tzirki aliyin el oliyin. Do not read that it's upon the eye, but rather above the eye. That he was able to lift himself above anyone who looked upon him.
Eye.
Right. And that's how Rashi says, Ole Ayin, Masalkin min Ayin, She'enu Shletus Bahen. The eye that gazed upon him had no power over him. So nothing affected him. I mean, nothing bothered him. If someone would do something, you let it roll off your back, it doesn't affect you. So that's how come Rabbi Yochanan was able to sit there, and he wasn't concerned of the Ayin Hara. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina Omer Bahacha, so he brings out a different source as to prove that Yosef, in fact, does not have, cannot get an Ayin Hara, because the famous bracha, V'yidgul arol b'kerav aretz. So what does the Pasuk say? That his children were given the bracha of being abundant, just like the fish in the midst of the land. So my dogim should be out, just like when it comes to fish. Mayim mechatsin aleihem, v'ein ayin har shaletas behen. You can look at the ocean, and you don't look straight down, you're not going to necessarily see anything, right? Because all the water is there. So Avzar shel Yosef, v'ein ayin har shaletas behen. So too, just like fish, the ayin har has no power over them. And some also explain the Indian is that fish, unlike people, do not have their eyes closed for the same amount of time. A lot of fish, they keep their eyes open all the time, probably looking out for sharks, whatever. So they are able to have control over their eyes. And this is really what this next explanation is. Yiboy Seema, Ayin Shlo, Ratzel, Lazayim, Mamashayin Shlo, Ein Ayin Har Shletas Bo. The eye, which was for Yosef, that did not gaze upon something which, or derive benefit from, and satiate itself, something which was not his. Rashi says, what was this? Lihanos me'eshes Adonav, to get benefit from his master's wife, namely Eshes Potiphar. Ein Ayin Har Shletas Bo. Which means, basically, if you're in control over your eyes, then no one's eyes can have control over you. That's the basic idea of it. So since Yosef was able to control his eyes, then so too, no one would give him an Ayin Hara. So Rabbi Yochanan, was it true that Rabbi Yochanan literally was Mizarish Yosef? That's what he says. It's possible that maybe he really wasn't, but he had a similar characteristic that he did not look at people and be affected by what he saw. Therefore, nothing would affect him either. And that's what really the Bach's question, all the Mepharshim asked, the two questions. The Ein Yaakov asked the question, the Beis Yosef asked the question, the Chiddushi and the Onim, everyone asked the question of why, when it came to Reb Gidol, they asked the question, why are you afraid of your Yetzer Hara? They did not ask him, aren't you afraid of an Ayin Hara? When it comes to Rabbi Yochanan, they only asked him, are you afraid of an Ayin Hara? Why wasn't he concerned of a Yetzer Hara? Maybe he has a Yetzer Hara. So let's look at the Bach. The Bach, again, which is really uncharacteristic of the Bach, that is so elaborate in detail, and usually it's very short. You see how lengthy this is. So let's look on the right side. Do you have the Bach over there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, we see you have the Aleph in parentheses. Loka stavi mar miyetzer hara. So, when it came to Rav Gidol, they asked him, are you afraid of the Yetzer Hara? Says the Bach, why didn't they ask the question from Gidol, aren't you afraid of an Ayin Hara? They asked that to Rav Yochanan, so why didn't they ask Rav Gidol, aren't you afraid of an Ayin Hara, that all these women are going to hear you asking all these, giving them all these details, you're there, they're going to look at you, maybe you're good looking too, I don't know. So aren't you afraid of an Ayin Hara? Just like Rav Yochanan, they asked. So says the Bach, the difference was, when it came to Rabbi Yochanan, he was mistalik bay. He was gazed upon by them. B'shayach bay ayin abisha. And by that, it was possible to get an ayin hara. Masha'en came Rabbi Gidol. When it came to Rabbi Gidol, he wasn't stared at, because he wasn't a good-looking guy, or also the way that he was situated, he didn't purposely sit there in order that they should gaze upon him. He was only there to field some questions. So whether or not they saw him was unimportant. He only wanted to give them the guidance of how to do tefillah properly. So therefore, to ask the question, are you afraid of an Ayin Hara, for Rav Gidol, they didn't have to ask. So a stronger question is why not the Yetzirah to Rav Yochanan? So this is what the Vav continues. Avol Kasha, Amayelo Amri Rav Yochanan Lo Mitzdapi Mar Miyetzirah. That's what Vav's question. Why aren't we concerned about that issue? Rav Yochanan has a Yetzirah. He's a human being. Yesh Lomar Mishum Rav Yochanan Apafav Mechasin Es Eina. It's brought down the low rock kid Amrinan Batinus. Very fascinating word Tinus that says that Rav Yochanan could not see. And therefore, whenever he would want to be able to see, they would actually have his eyes open with these iron combs. They would actually need to lift up his eyes because his eyebrows and eyelashes were just so heavy. So therefore, what does that mean? It means that he was obviously not able to see. He was able to be seen, but he was not able to see.
Blind?
He wasn't blind. He was not blind, but he was...
Heavy eyebrows.
Yeah, very heavy eyebrows to the point that he just could not... He did not see clearly unless he had his eyes widened. If he opened up his eyes wide, then he could see. Otherwise, he had difficulty being able to see. And therefore, out the Yetzirah, what Yetzirah is there? He doesn't... He knows where he is. He knows there are women in front of him, but he can't see them. So he has no Yetzirah. An Ayin Hara, there is, because they're looking at him and gazing.
Say like the new governor of New York. He can't see too well, but it didn't stop him.
That's also true. That's true.
Right.
But he's also not Rav Yochanan, I would say, if I can make that statement.
Yes, I hope you can see.
Yes. So anyway, so that's how the Bach answers it. And maybe borrowing this whole Gemara is that we see, and therefore Rav Yochanan has the Ayin Hara, does not affected by an Ayin Hara, is because when it came to Yosef, he was able to see, but he was able to have complete control over his eyesight, so he didn't derive Hana from Ishus Potiphar. So since he controlled over his eyes, no eyes controlled over him. So when it came to Rav Yochanan, he also had control over his eyes, but it wasn't because he had perfect eyesight. It was just because he couldn't see. So now that he couldn't really see, so no Ayin Hara would affect him either. So he had the ability, his eyes did not get affected by others, so he also, that's how it worked.
Actually, himself almost was attached, that he saw a picture of his father.
Right.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. A great Nissan came with the car.
What?
A great Nissan.
Oh, no.
That's not good.
No.
All right, let's move on to the next mission. All right, very fascinating mission. There's a lot to discuss, so let's get right at it. Nashim, let's just go through the mission quickly. Then we're going to go through it slowly again. Nashim avadim tanim. So when it comes to women, avadim, which is referring to an avadim kananim. Non-Jewish slaves, in which had a bris milah, they had tefillah as well. So when it comes to Noshim and Avadim and Katanim, they're Peturin Mikriya Shema. All of these three do not have to say the Shema, and we continue on the base. Umin HaTefillin, they don't wear tefillin, as we know, women don't put on tefillin. The Chayavin B'Tefillah, they do have to daven. Umuzuzah Uberchas HaMazim. So
are they saying it's a mitzvah to say as my bravashma?
That is what Rashi, I believe, is going to say. Yeah.
That's
the Gemara is going to basically ask straight through.
Well, why would you say that? Because you can say Shema for a long, lengthy period of time at night and during the day. It's not a finite time. You have plenty of time to say Shema.
But there is a soap zman kriya Shema. Right. You have a specific window of opportunity to say the Shema, and afterwards you
have a soap smile every mitzvah that you can say if you really want to look at it that way. If there comes a time you can't, whatever.
What do you mean? All positive mitzvahs are not necessarily bound by time. There's some mitzvahs which you can do any time, such as when we said, for example, Berachas HaMazon, Mezuzah. Those are positive mitzvahs, so Ksavta, Mezuzah, right? Says we have called to Savat. It's a positive mitzvah to bench, and it's not bound by time. Now, the Gemara is going to be asking straight down what is the whole chiddush of this Mishnah. If we already know mitzvah sasneish as man grama, women are potter.
Right.
So then obviously they'd be potter from the ones the Mishnah said. And the ones that the Mishnah said that they're obligated in, it's probably because they're not bound by time. So the Gemara is going to deal with all these on a case-by-case basis, discussing why the Mishnah really needs to elaborate upon any of these whatsoever. Okay, so let's look at this first Rashi, going back to Amud Aleph. Noshim v'avonim katanim v'turim mikriyashma. So as you said correctly, shehi mitzvah sase shazman grama. Rashi says because the positive mitzvah which is bound by time, the kaimulon b'kedushin, and the Gemara in the first parak in kedushin explains in the Mishnah there, the nashim b'turos midorais, that women do not have a Torah obligation to do any of those positive mitzvahs if they are bound by time. Tefillin is nami mitzvah sase shazman grama. Also, when it comes to tefillin, it's bound by time. What do you mean? Tefillin are worn all day. Well, that's true, but they're not worn at night. And that's what Rashi says. The sabar laila v'shabbos lazman tefillin indu. That, as we know, we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos. We don't wear tefillin at night. Now, it could be that if you're wearing tefillin during the day, like you'll see some people that wear tefillin all day, they may continue wearing them into the evening a little bit. But it's not something if a person would not be wearing the tefillin that you put them on at night that you're not supposed to do. So mitzvah sase shazman grama.
Like tzitzis.
Yeah. A lot of people, you know, they're wearing tzitzis during the day, they continue at night until they get undressed, and I can think of the tzitzis.
There's no mitzvah for it. So if you're wearing garments of the day at night, it's a shiloh whether or not you should be wearing tzitzis. And vice versa, you're wearing night clothing in the day, you're walking around in your nightgown until in the afternoon. It's a machlokas, but tefillin, for sure, it's a mitzvah sase shazman grama, according to this Mishnah clearly. And therefore, they are potter. Now, let's see this next. There's a lot to discuss. We'll just see this Rashi, and then we'll see this Tosfot, then we'll stop, and we'll go back next week and discuss this Mishnah at greater length. So Rashi continues this last Rashi in Amud Aleph. Ketanim, afil katan shegil chinuch. When it comes to ketanim, even if they're not very young, but they're even of trainable age, doesn't discuss exactly what that age is, 10, let's say, for example, depending on what the mitzvah is, lo hatil al av l'chancho, it's not an obligation upon the father to educate this child, b'kriya shema. Why not? Because the child is not continuously found by the father at the time when it's to say the Shema.
Or you could look at it this way, maybe the father's not around. The father's not around. Maybe not the child, maybe the father's
right.
Not around.
Right, right. And that's
the kid Shema.
And this is actually a Shiloh that some people want to derive from this Rashi, that what happens if Lamashal is a divorce? Right, that book is a divorce, and the children live by
the mother.
Right. And look, if you would want to read this Rashi, which we don't hold like what we're about to say, but some people would want to read this Rashi that the whole mitzvah chinuch is only when it comes to mitzvahs if it's matzoi tamid, if the child is continuously by the parent, by the father. So if the child is over in Utah over there, so we don't postulate that. When it comes to the Shema, that's. We do say that. When it comes to other obligations, we do not. So let's we're going to stop a couple of minutes before 10 after. But let's just see at least the beginning of Tosfos. So Tosfos, the bottom one, says, "Ukatana patur mikriya shema perish akuntra." So Rashi's explanation that we just high school diploma. We'll hang it up here. That according to Rashi, as we just read, is our Mishnah is talking about a katan shegil chinuch. Nonetheless, even a katan who has reached the age of chinuch is potter from kriya shema. And Rashi says, as we saw, because the father really can't educate the child. V'lo nihira. So Tosfos doesn't understand this pshat in Rashi. D'ha b'perek ulav hagazel, because it's brought down in the third chapter in Sechta Sukkah, I'm reading on it, says Katan Hayodeh Lishmar Tfilin Aviv Chayav Liknoslo Tfilin, that as soon as a child is able to guard his tefillin, and Rashi over there says that he would not bring it into a basic kisei, into the bathroom, at that moment the child is already instructed that the parents should buy them tefillin. Alma, what do we see? Kishagil chinuch, deshaychi be tefillin, chayav tefillin. So we see that as soon as the child is able to guard his tefillin, even though he's a katan, Gemara says, still he's not wearing tefillin. So what's the problem? The problem is because Kriya Shema in the Mishnah also says min ha tefillin, first words on Amud Aleph, on Amud Beis. So how could Rashi say that a katan who's reached the age of chinuch is still potter from tefillin? Okay, that Rashi talked about Shema, but we see it's not true. We see that even a katan who's reached chinuch should be obligated to wear tefillin. And then he says, we'll just see this next line. We'll stop. We'll see. Pick up on the stosis next week. We Kriya Shema Nami Yesh L'Chayvo Yoser Mistama Kedashkechan Hasam Katan Hayodei L'Daber Aved Malam Do Torah Pasuk Rishon Shel Kriya Shema. So we already, when it comes to the Shema, even more so that as soon as a child knows how to speak Katan Hayodei L'Daber, that's the time in which the child should already be instructed to learn at least Pasuk Rishon Shel Kriya Shema. So what do we see from that? Obviously, the obligation of a child to start saying the Kriya Shema should be once they reach a certain level of chinuch. So how could Rashi possibly say that a katan who has reached the age of chinuch is still part of Kriya Shema, and therefore we'll have to understand Tosa's explanation next time? Let's stop here. Rabbi Chananel ben Achash, Baruch Hu, Zechus V'yechar, Abraham, Tzvi, Shneimar, Adonai Chavetz, Aman Sid, Koyadut, Zorav, Yad,